And now, Audio Theater Central.
Oh, hi there. I'm John Avery Whittaker. But most folks around here call me Whit.
My name is Finian Jones, and you are...
Hello, I'm Dave Arnold, your host for Focus on the Family Radio Theater.
Hey everybody, I'm JD.
And I'm Roy.
And I'm Andrew, and we're your hosts for Audio Theater Central.
Welcome to Episode 3. We hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. By the way, how was your holiday, guys?
Ugh, stuffed. So much ham. Of course, I don't really like turkey, so I stuff myself with ham.
Me too. Ham, turkey, stuffing, green bean casserole, you know, the works.
Stuffed with stuffing.
Well, Andrew is not responding because he has had so much turkey and so much stuffing that he can't even talk.
Yeah, exactly. All that tryptophan in the turkey, that's that weird chemical that like makes you sleepy, and so that's why I'm just...
Tryptophan? You took a trip on the holiday?
Are you tripping?
No, it's tryptophan, tryptophan. It is a chemical that causes your brain to like kind of slow down, and so you get tired and all that stuff. And it's in turkey, so when you eat tons of turkey, you get like tons of tryptophan, so you get tons of tired or something.
Wow.
I think that's what our podcaster listeners are thinking right now.
Oh, you're probably right. Sorry, I just, you know.
Well, I'm still eating leftover turkey. But anyway, what's coming up, Andrew?
Well, we are going to review a Christmas story called The Shepherd's Prayer. We also have an interview with Focus on the Family's Paul McCusker. We'll also stop by the mailroom for some listener feedback. And Roy has some news for us.
We've got a lot going on this time, so we'd better get to it. Take it away, Roy. Oh, by the way, you guys want a turkey sandwich?
No, no more tryptophan, please.
How about some turkey soup?
Roy, please do the news quickly.
Lamplighter Theater, the currently airing series The Wanderer, wraps up at the end of December. Then, kicking off the new year, will be a re-airing of A Peep Behind the Scenes. Just a reminder, folks, the discount code is still available, but only to the end of the year on regularly priced items. In Odyssey news, the album 52 finale, The Malted Milkball Falcon, will air on December 11th. As for Focus on the Family Radio Theater, The Voyage of the Dawn Treader will wrap up December 4th, and then it's all Christmas stories for the remainder of the month. Shoemaker Martin and The Luke Report's Child of Promise are among them. I'm Roy, reporting live for, I guess this isn't live, reporting a live for Audio Theater Central. Just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Well, this episode we're going to review a story called The Shepherd's Prayer. It's a Christmas story written by Richard M. Barry, and Andrew's going to go ahead and read the summary for this one.
The Shepherd's Prayer drama takes listeners on a journey to Bethlehem to experience the birth and life of Jesus Christ in a fresh and thought-provoking way. It is the story of an orphan called Anam and how his encounter with the story of Jesus' birth changed his life forever. In addition to the enjoyment of an unforgettable story, this drama will incite listeners to think about why God chose the shepherds to be the first to hear the good news and their role in spreading the news of Jesus before and after his ministry here on earth. It also powerfully shows the fulfillment of prophecy that pointed to Jesus as the long-awaited Messiah. And now, enjoy a clip of The Shepherd's Prayer.
They were the first to receive the news.
Tell them that an angel sent us here and that we have come to bring gifts.
They were the first to visit the Christ child.
What do you see? A young woman.
And yet, in their day, they were reviled.
Be on your guard. You cannot trust a shepherd.
The Shepherd's Prayer. A dramatic presentation celebrating God's grace as shown to outcasts.
Okay, do you guys have any initial thoughts on the story overall, that first reactions to it?
The first thing that grabbed my attention right out of the gate was the music.
Oh yeah.
Definitely. As soon as I heard it, I was in it. It brought me into the story really, and then the way it started out was very excellent too, with the action and stuff.
All the Foley, sound design, everything.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Stellar.
I loved that opening scene. There's no spoken lines. It's all sound effects. Just amazing how that you can really picture what's happening.
Exactly. It took me the second time I heard it, that little short part in the beginning, to once I heard the story, the full story for the first time, and then I listened to it again. The beginning made a little more sense, but it's still amazing.
Actually, the first time I heard it, speaking of the music, I text messaged JD and I asked him, who did the music for this? And I had an idea of who it was just because I could tell from the style. I knew what his answer was going to be. And all he said was, just take a guess. And so I knew it had to be John Campbell. And of course it was. He did the music on this and it's excellent. I don't even know what to say about it. It's just incredible.
So the drama was adapted from a book written by Richard M. Barry, it's by the same title. And it was adapted by Dave Arnold, who is executive producer for Adventures in Odyssey. Sound design was by Todd Bastide, Gap Digital. And of course, as Andrew mentioned, John Campbell was the composer. And it's a great story for all ages, I think. I recommend sitting down and just listening together as a family. It's only 80 minutes long, and it's a good, evening to spend together as a family in this Christmas holiday season.
Truly, there are some parts of dialogue, just the main character talking to himself.
Kind of narrating.
Narrating, yeah, his diary. But besides those parts, I think the rest of it is just amazing, well dramatized. And like you said, the acting is incredible.
So let's look at some positives that really stood out to us. I thought it was really thought-provoking. I loved the way the story plays out, and the ending is really good. It's not an extremely tense cliffhanger, but it has a great twist at the end nonetheless.
There were a couple of quotes that kind of stood out to me. The first one being the fatherly figure of the main character of the story, Anam. He is searching for his parents and searching for a purpose in his life, and the fatherly figure tells him, Anam, look up into the heavens, what do you see? And he says, I see millions of stars. And the father replies back to him something I think that is very powerful. And he says, do you suppose that the hand that created such grandeur to display his majesty has overlooked a purpose to you? And that kind of stood out to me, really grabbed me. And I thought, yeah, it's so true.
Yeah, that's a great line. I liked that one.
Like in Genesis, where the Bible details several, it really goes into quite a lot of detail about creation and all that, but in one of the verses, it's a very short sentence, and it just says, and he made the stars also, and that's all it says about that. But even with something that was only given such a cursory glance in the Bible, really, it just goes to show how much more. Because the whole theme of the Bible is about mankind and humanity and coming back to God and redemption and hope. And so it just goes to show how much more deeply God cares about us than even his creation, even though he knows all the stars by name, the Bible says in another place. And he cares obviously about his creation, but none so much as the men into which he breathed the breath of life.
Another quote that stood out to me is towards the end of the production. It is a man in the story, and he's talking to Anam about the truth, and he says, I am a new man. And talking to Anam, he says, I am a new man. That's what the truth does. Once we know it, we can never be the same again. I think that's true in every case. Once you know the truth, and once you know how much God loves you, and once you experience that, you can't walk away from it. And even if you do, you never forget that.
Yeah, and the story is kind of like each individual's journey to find the truth, to find their meaning in life, and it's kind of played out through the character of Anam, which literally means no name, so that kind of tells you a little bit about what he's searching for. But this theme of a searching and a longing to know your place and your purpose in life, it's explored in a really intriguing way in this drama. Do you have any other positive things that you wanted to discuss?
I really noticed when the angel is going to speak to the shepherds they kind of describe the way his voice should be in the preceding sentence. When one of them said that his voice was very strong and full of authority. And then when the voice came on and it was the voice of the angel talking, it was remarkably like what I would have expected from the description he had just given. It was perfect. It was almost like exactly what you would expect from an angel voice. That was really good. And it just sort of stood out to me. I really liked that.
Another thing that kind of stood out to me was the blanket that Anam receives from his father with the mysterious inscription on it, the message that the shepherds had received from the angels.
And it's interesting to note that the whole time he's searching for his purpose in life, he's on this journey. As you mentioned, his father gave him this blanket, and it's at the very beginning of the story, the very beginning of his journey. And the whole time he's searching for the truth of who he is and the truth of what his purpose is. And the whole time he has the truth, or at least the key to the truth, in his possession in the form of that blanket with the inscription of what the angel said to the shepherds, proclaiming the truth of who Jesus was, which was really pretty interesting. Which is another facet of what really happens with us, too. I mean, everywhere we look, we see God's handiwork and we see the truth of who he is. And yet we can spend so much time in our lives searching for what he's already given to us if we would just open our eyes to see it.
That's a good point, Andrew. I hadn't even thought of that until you brought that up. But I mean, there's a lot of people out here in the world that, I mean, God's given us his word. It's right there, right in front of us. But there's a lot of people that just, even though it is available, they don't choose to take heed to what is there and what God has made available to us. And kind of like Anam does in this story, he's got that there with him, but doesn't really grasp the full meaning of what that message on that blanket says.
And really, he was even, in a sense, born closer to the truth and drifted away from it as time went on, because if we're just talking about this sort of symbolism of the blanket, when he was a baby, of course, he was wrapped in this blanket. And so he was wrapped in truth, but drifted away from it. And sometimes we see that as well. People that are born with not born with an understanding, but are born to parents who are in truth and have an understanding of the truth, and then they drift away from it. And it takes them such a long time to find their way back to something that they were born into.
Another example of the grace and mercy of God. Well, there were a few things that I did notice in the story that kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I guess I could say it that way. One of the things was the actor for Anam. He seemed a little bit stiff, not really into the character. He also sounded like he was way too young to be 30 years old.
Yes.
Did you guys pick up on those?
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, more like he was reading a piece of paper sometimes.
Yeah, it did come across that way in a few parts.
Sometimes, but most, like, that was only in a few places, though. I did pick up on it, but at other times I thought it was just fine. But I did notice that he did sound really young to be 30 years old.
I also noticed a couple of other things that kind of, if you're viewing this from a historically accurate point of view, they kind of were a little bit off to me, such as journal writing. I'm not sure, but obviously I don't know for certain, but it sounded kind of weird that somebody would be carrying around parchments or something like that and writing in a journal all the time. I just thought that might have been a little too much of an assumption about their practices back then. Of course, I'm not an historian, so I could be way off here, but it just kind of seemed a little odd to me that somebody would be writing a journal all the time, especially on traveling on the road. So,
yeah, it kind of presented a pretty funny mental image, like of some guy in a robe rolling up a big parchment and unrolling it and rolling it back up and unrolling it and writing in it. And
yeah,
it was pretty funny. But who knows, right? So,
and there were a couple of other things like modern phrases that I thought didn't really belong, such as they used the cliche to shed some light on.
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
I don't know, maybe they did use that type of language back then, but it just kind of seemed a little too modern to me. The other thing was they measured distance in miles. I don't really know if they used miles back then.
Oh, I didn't. Wow, that's awesome. I didn't even notice any of that stuff, to be honest.
Another thing was there was a reference made to the sheep and kind of comparing the, I think it was Anam to one of the sheep, and it says he sticks with the herd.
Yes.
Well, I think a group of sheep is called a flock, not a herd.
That's true.
That's true.
Herd, that would be cows.
Yes, exactly. That's right. So, that's funny. Man.
Then again, maybe I'm just too picky. I don't know. I'm very analytical, and I notice things like these that a lot of people might not even notice, so don't let my observances stop you from checking out this drama.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, it's not like it affected the story or anything.
No.
So, it's just, yeah. Did you notice any of that stuff, Roy?
I didn't.
I did not.
You know, I just noticed it just now.
Well, yeah, that's true. No, that's good. Thank you, JD. You have opened my eyes.
Enlightenment.
Yes.
And the other thing, which we can't really go into much detail about, but as far as I know, there is no biblical evidence to support the ending of the story. Of course, you do kind of get the warm fuzzies at the end, but, you know, I don't really know if that's how things all panned out. Of course, this is a fiction.
Right.
But.
And it was a nice thought.
It was.
And you'll see when you buy it and listen to it, because this is something you have to do, because it's an awesome story.
Yes. Correction, you'll hear. You won't see it, but you'll hear.
Right. Yes.
Who said see?
You did.
No, I said listen to it.
Oh, yes.
I think. I don't know. I'm losing my mind. It's all that turkey. Oh, man. Apparently, tryptophan has a warping effect on your brain, too.
Well, do you guys have any final thoughts on the Shepherd's Prayer?
Well, just overall, I was very impressed, really. It was very good. The story itself was excellent. The writing, of course, was very good. The music and the actors, everything was
top notch.
Thank you for supplying that word right there. Beautiful. Yes, it was. Except for maybe just a couple little things we pointed out, it was exceptional. So
yeah, and remember, these are just our opinions, you know.
Exactly.
Go out and buy it and get your own opinion.
Exactly.
Hey, I like that. That's
and
good.
And let us know what you think about it yourself.
It's really worth getting and listening to. I think it would be a great Christmas tradition for a family to start. Every year you pull out the Bible and read the Luke account of the Christmas story and then listen to the Shepherd's Prayer.
Yeah.
There you go. Hey, it'd be a great family Christmas gift to itself, like from the family to the family.
Good idea.
Sure, how about that?
Well, we weren't able to actually get an interview with Richard M. Berry, the author of The Shepherd's Prayer, but he was able to answer some of our questions via email, so we're going to go through a couple of these questions we asked him and read his responses to them. The first question we asked was, what was the inspiration for this story? And he said, it was the Christmas season of 1997 when I began thinking about the story that would eventually become The Shepherd's Prayer. My wife and I had just returned from church. We were talking about how wonderful the story of Christ's birth was and what it meant to the world, then and now. For all the good that came of his birth, and for all that generations have read and talked about it since then, there also was great sadness that resulted in Bethlehem when Herod ordered the killing of all the male babies. Not much has been written or is ever said about that traumatic event and how it must have impacted the people of Bethlehem and their attitudes about the poor Galilean child who was the target of Herod's wrath. And not much has been written about the shepherds who were the first to proclaim that this child was the promised Messiah. How might their lives have been affected by Herod's massacre? I started thinking about those untold stories and, after researching them, found that they were inspiring stories that were begging to be told. And so I set out to try to tell them in a way that would lead the reader on his or her own journey to discover Christ and what it truly means to be a Christian.
And the second question for Richard M. Berry was, without giving away too much of the story, can you tell us a little bit about some of the characters and how you developed them? And he responded with, I needed a way to show what the state of mind of the people in Bethlehem was 30 years after the birth of Christ. What better way to show this than through the eyes of an orphan who had been born in Bethlehem shortly after Jesus' birth there? This young man had been saved from the massacre by his mother, who died saving her baby.
The young man had been raised by a kindly merchant, but since he didn't really know his name or heritage, he was relegated to the bottom of the social order. When he finally confronts his adopted father, who had found him as a baby, he learns that he might have been born in Bethlehem. I wanted to have a likable young man who was genuinely searching for the truth. He needed to be someone we can all relate to. His journey is really a metaphor for the Christian life. The development of this character really flows from his motivations. He's basically an outcast. He starts out wanting to discover who he is. In the culture of that time, you're defined by who your birth father is.
Our next question was, how and when did you reach the decision to dramatize this book? Mr. Berry replied, early on, we had the book turned into an audiobook. We found a fantastic narrator named John McDonough. Mr. McDonough had done over 200 audiobooks. The one Christians would most recognize is the Mitford series of books. Someone who owned a radio station had heard the audiobook and asked if they could play it on the air. We let them and got a really good response. I had been into radio dramas for many years. I got started listening to old Sherlock Holmes radio programs while driving. Obviously, an audiobook isn't the ideal format for radio, so I got the idea to turn it into a radio drama.
And the last question we had for him was, you worked with a lot of pros on this project, Dave Arnold, Todd Bastide, John Campbell. What was it like working with them? He replied, I've actually not met either Dave Arnold or John Campbell. Todd Bastide was the person I contacted about making it into a radio drama. He suggested we have Dave do the script. Of course, I was thrilled to have someone of this caliber do the script. By then, I had heard several Focus on the Family radio theater dramas, and I think they are some of the best quality radio dramas out there. My favorite is Les Miserables. Dave did such a terrific job on the dramatization that there was very little input needed from me. The same with Todd. At one point, I made some editing suggestions, but for the most part, Todd did everything independently at his studio.
If you would like to get your own copy of The Shepherd's Prayer, you can visit our website, audiotheatercentral.com, and there will be a link in our show notes. Also, if you sign up for our mailing list, your name will be entered into a drawing to win your very own free copy of The Shepherd's Prayer. And now, our interview with Paul McCusker.
Well, we're talking today with Paul McCusker, one of the masterminds of Adventures in Odyssey and Focus on the Family Radio Theater. Paul, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, we're really excited about radio theater returning to the air, and so I wanted to talk about that a little bit. First of all, what prompted the decision to bring radio theater back on the radio waves?
Well, I want to say it was a sudden burst of good sense. We are having produced so many programs, the different, whether it was Les Mis or Father Gilbert or Chronicles of Narnia, we had so much stuff that eventually someone figured out that it seemed to be a waste to have that and not actually air it again. And so there was sort of an internal campaign to Focus on the Family to use this great storytelling resource and get it back out there again. And, of course, we are thrilled that they took the initiative and decided to do it.
So are there any new projects in the works, or will this just be a re-airing of the past productions?
No, the intention is to go on to new projects. I mean, when Focus on the Family radio theater came off the air, part of it was to alleviate the pressure of trying to create new programs. It's almost like creating feature films, but for a weekly series.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to keep up with that was getting increasingly difficult, especially with us doing Adventures in Odyssey as well. So the idea when it came off as a regular program was that we would take more of a feature film attitude with it. So even after radio theater stopped airing, we then went on to produce the Amazing Grace trilogy, and then last year released the Screwtape Letters. So it's always been in our mind to continue to do new productions. It just helps have the incentive of broadcast to do it. So yes, we're now meeting to discuss what projects have been on our wish list that we want to tackle next. We have some other ideas in the works where we're looking and thinking these were projects we hadn't thought of before, but some opportunities are coming up where we may be able to do them now. Just a lot of mix of things, but our intention is to begin to create new programs.
Can you give us any hints about what may be in store?
Well, strangely enough, one of the things that we're talking about, but it may be too much to ask, is the possibility of doing The Hobbit. We are actually approaching or have been talking to the Tolkien estate, or at least putting feelers out there to see if that's possible, in line with the on-again, off-again nature of the film that's supposed to come out. Of course, we do get a lot of requests for more Father Gilbert stories, and we take those seriously. We've got some others on our wish list. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn. One that I think we've been wanting to tell for a long time is Tale of Two Cities, the Charles Dickens classic. Maybe some other original things that we've talked about developing, and other partnerships. The Amazing Grace trilogy that we did was sort of in partnership with Walden, who had produced the film.
Okay.
Amazing Grace, with about William Wilberforce. And that sort of inspired us to say, well, why don't we tell the story that you can't tell in a two-hour film? And that's why we then did the stories of John Newton, Alotta Equiano, and William Wilberforce, more on the spiritual realm for him, of what led him to the abolition movement. So even as we look to the future, we're constantly watching for opportunities like that, where we have partners in motion picture or other media where they're doing something that we would be happy to do as a complimentary project.
Well, that's exciting. Every one of those examples that you mentioned are stellar stories in and of themselves, and I know that dramatizing them will just make it phenomenal.
Well, that's what we hope. I mean, a lot of times what we hope to do is push people back to either the original source material, the books, or in the case of a biography, that if we do a story about a figure, a historical figure, or someone like that, that they will go back to find out more about that. In fact, you reminded me that one of the stories that we had been playing with for quite a long time was the story behind C.S. Lewis's writing of Mere Christianity, because the backdrop of that was World War II, it was London, the Blitz, and the BBC had commissioned him to do broadcast talks explaining the basics of the faith. And that led to what became Mere Christianity. And there was a book that came out called C.S. Lewis at the BBC by Justin Phillips that we looked at when it first came out and thought, you know, there's a story here. We don't want to do a book on tape of Mere Christianity, but there's a pretty dramatic story behind the writing of that book that I think we might want to tell.
Now, currently, the domain name radiotheater.org is being forwarded to Christian Book Distributors Radio Theater webpage. Are there any plans to launch an official Focus on the Family Radio Theater website again?
Well, it's sort of in the mix of discussions. I wish I could announce that we had a formal, absolutely going to do it kind of plan. As of right now, it's being discussed, but there aren't firm plans to do it. And, of course, CBD at this stage is one of our distribution partners, so that's one reason why it's bouncing to them. So we're holding on to it. I guess if there were plans to let it go completely, we wouldn't even bother holding on to the name. So the fact that we're holding on to that is good news, I think. At least it gives me hope that we'll be able to redevelop it and relaunch it.
Now, you mentioned the Father Gilbert mysteries, and those are some of the most favorites of Roy, Andrew, and I. And we were just wondering, where did you find the inspiration for this series, and what birthed this character of Father Gilbert in your mind?
Well, actually, it came up years ago, not even as an option for radio theater. I had this idea of sort of an Anglican minister who gets caught up into these different kind of mysteries. And I had this years ago, and it went under a different name, and I'd done a proposal and actually sent it to my literary agent, who looked at it and said, nobody would be interested in this. Put it away. Forget about it. And so I did. I actually just kind of set it aside. And then when we were doing radio theater, pretty much as a weekly, one of the things that we were coming up against was, forgive the expression, but filling the slots. I mean, how do we, what projects should we be doing? I mean, there's a point where you run out of public domain books, and then you do something like Mitford, like we did, and the complexity of taking on a book that's under copyright now with an author who has a vested interest in how you do it, and all of that sort of stretches out the amount of time it takes to produce these things. And I think at one point, the two ideas that I had tucked away were Father Gilbert and the Luke reports. And so when they were saying, well, what should we do, I kind of brought those out. And I'll be honest, I thought, well, the Luke reports sort of makes sense. I could see everyone getting behind that. But Father Gilbert was a little bit outside of the bubble for what you'd expect Focus on the Family to produce. And when they all looked at it and said, oh, yeah, let's do this, I was surprised, pleasantly surprised. But then I actually had to bring shape and structure to
right.
what had started off as kind of a vague idea. And that's exactly where we started. And to be honest, you know that a big part of radio theater for us is telling secular worthy stories from a Christian worldview. That's mm-hmm. who we are. It's what we do. And it isn't meant to be proselytizing in a subversive sense. It's just like Lewis did with Chronicles of Narnia.
Right.
You know, that there are Christian themes that bubble up and emerge out of hopefully a good story. And people either get it or they don't. And with Father Gilbert, I honestly thought that it would have the right mix of credibility. Because even people who are not of a Christian faith will respect, to some degree, a man in a collar. You
right.
know what I mean? And then when I thought, well, let's put it in England, because actually when I came up with the idea, I was living in England, it struck me that that was one way to deal with themes regarding the faith, but in a credible way for those who are not of the faith. And that was a big part of my motivation for developing it.
So what prompted you to tackle such raw and even controversial issues in these dramas?
Well, again, because I thought it was a good vehicle to do it. The other material, other stories that we were telling weren't the right places to do it, especially if we felt that for some of the material, kids would be listening in.
Mm-hmm.
With Father Gilbert, it seemed like it was a good place to deal with and explore themes and perhaps even controversial themes. And by the way, I think that's one of the things about Father Gilbert that makes it different from other types of stories. Whenever I'm working on them, I'm not necessarily driven by an agenda or a sermon or a message that I'm trying to get across. A lot of times, what I want to do through the story is just hold something up and explore it, look at it from different angles and consider it as the characters would consider it, and sort of do that on behalf of our listening audience, too. So I'm not necessarily using Father Gilbert to preach anything as much as we're tackling different things and saying, you know, let's explore this together. Let's mm-hmm. In this story, we're going to look at it from different angles and see what we think and see if there are any conclusions that we might draw. And that, to me, has been a big part of the fun of doing the Father Gilbert stories.
Now, you mentioned the Luke reports, and I just wanted to share with you years ago when I was teaching a Sunday school class of younger children, about 6 to 8 year olds. We were studying the Gospels, and so I actually brought in the Luke reports and would play a section of them, and then we would discuss the themes and then the stories that were brought up in that. And I thought it was just an amazing way to use that, and the kids just really latched on to the concepts that were brought up in that. And I thought, wow, this is just amazing.
Oh, good. Well, and that, to me, I think in a broad sense, not to take specific credit, but that's the power of story. And that, of course, was the goal, was how do we dramatize this on two levels? One is of course, the gospel itself,
mm-hmm.
and to make that come alive as much as possible dramatically and make it real and, again, drive people back to the source material, the gospel itself, to read it for themselves. But the other level, of course, was the adventure of Luke trying to put together the gospel and to see if that would also kind of quicken the interest of the listeners in that it's more than just this book, that there were lives and people, flesh and blood, human beings and dramas going on behind the scenes. And so I'm really encouraged to hear that you were able to do that.
Hey guys, why don't we go down to the mailroom and read some of the letters that we've gotten? The mailroom guy's left for the day, so it should be safe to go down there and encroach upon his territory.
Oh, okay, good.
He's not too nice.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Where is it? Down the hall here?
Down the hall, we got to go down two flights of stairs and then down at the end of the corridor.
Flights of stairs. What a weird phrase. Right?
Ah, oh, finally. All those stairs.
Man, yes.
Okay, JD. Is it this door here?
No, no, don't open that door.
Good job, Roy. What in the world is all this stuff?
Whoops.
That's the storage room.
Oh.
I thought it'd be kind of weird for somebody to keep like lawnmowers and such things in their mailroom.
Right.
I mean, I would expect a mailroom to contain mail.
Yes.
Huh. Maybe you should go down to the door you said, huh?
Seriously, yes. Good idea. Look, don't ever ask me to help you move the studio, okay, JD? Or, well, when you do, just give me an advance notice so I can be out of town.
Will do. No, it's this door right here.
Oh, okay. Much better.
It even says mailroom on it.
Oh, yes. See, Roy, I told you you should have learned to read.
Here's one here, Roy. Go ahead and read this one.
Oh, okay. Andrew, can you pass me that mail opener, please?
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. All right, this is from Austin, and it says, "Hey, I love your podcast. You guys really get into reviews, which I like, although sometimes the humor seems forced. Thanks for doing the interviews, and I enjoy listening to those, too. Keep up the good work, Austin."
Well, thank you for those comments, Austin.
Yeah, thanks, Austin. We appreciate your feedback, and we will try to work on that and make that a little better. Although I will let you know that our reviews are never scripted. That's all free-flow conversation. We never script those. So the only part that's scripted is our introduction to each episode and then the very end. So, but we will try to work on that.
All right. I have a letter here that I will read from Max, and he says, "I just started listening to your new podcast, and it is really cool. I especially liked the interview with Mark Hamby. AIO is the best." All right, totally. That was my interjection right there. "Radio Theater and Lamplighter Theater are awesome, too. But I was surprised to see you did not include Down Gilead Lane, because it is great, too. Other good radio dramas are The Pond and Paws and Tails."
Well, Max, I'll respond to that one.
Go ahead.
I agree with you that Down Gilead Lane is an awesome, or should I say,
sort of was yeah,
an awesome audio drama. Good for the family. They are currently not making any more Down Gilead Lane episodes, but they are re-airing them, but we will not be doing reviews of those shows. And I do agree with you that The Pond and Paws and Tails are also great audio dramas that we will be looking into in the future.
Good answer. You're a natural interviewer. Oh, I mean, yes. Interviewee.
Yeah. Here, JD, here's a letter for you.
All right. This one here is from Garrett. He said, "I just started listening to your show and was wondering if you had checked out the Ceiling Fan podcast, my favorite audio drama. I was wondering if you were planning on ever getting behind the scenes on it or maybe reviewing it." Well, Garrett, we have actually been corresponding with Kevin McCreary over at the Ceiling Fan podcast, and we will be working with them in the future, so you may hear something from them in a future episode, so keep listening.
Here, Andrew, open up this one.
"Hey, look, it's addressed to me and you." Oh, wow, cool. Oh, I've never gotten fan mail before. That's awesome.
Me neither.
Okay, and it says, from Brittany. Do we know Brittany?
I don't know. Read it.
I think we do. I don't know. Well, we'll see. Here we go. "Hey, Roy and Andrew." Triple exclamation marks. Wow.
Oh.
"Hope you guys are..." Letter R. "Working hard." Lol. Oh, LOL. Got it. Okay. Duh, Andrew.
Where'd you learn to read?
Seriously. "Just thought that I would say hello."
Oh, yes. We are working so hard.
Yes, Brittany, we are dying from sitting behind these microphones. I mean, walking around and opening mailrooms and such things. It is killing us. But thanks for dropping us that line, and we are always willing to hear from our listeners out there if you just want to say hello or have a comment to make or anything. So thank you, Brittany.
Sounds like you guys have a fan out there.
Oh.
Oh, yes. I have a fan right beside me.
In the mailroom?
Yeah.
Okay. Check out this. I got this letter from Amy, and she says, "Absolutely love your podcast. Just found out about it, and we are listening to your past episode right now." Right as I speak? Great stuff.
Ooh.
"Can't wait for the next one." Thanks, Amy. We appreciate that input. We like these ones that are so encouraging.
Positive and encouraging, yes. You know something? How did she know that we'd be reading those right now and like manage to listen to them while we're reading them?
I know, that's pretty cool. You can listen to two podcasts at the same time.
At the same time.
Wow.
Is that like amazing. Time traveling?
Hey. Ooh.
The Imagination Station.
Oh, got it.
Perfect lead-in.
Totally an Odyssey reference. That's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Well, of course, you know. Well, yeah, go ahead.
All right. Here, JD, I think I found another letter for you.
Okay. This one here is from Carlton. He says, have you guys heard the John Bevere stories that are dramatized? Also, are you guys going to review all the Left Behind stories and Colonial Radio Theater? Well, Carlton, I personally have never heard of Colonial Radio Theater or the John Bevere stories, but we will look into those. If they meet our criteria, we will definitely be taking a look at those in the future. As for Left Behind, we have that on our docket. We may look at those in the future as well. So keep listening.
Actually, I have heard of Colonial Radio Theater and listened to several of the episodes, and they are excellent audio dramas, very well done, high quality. Sound design is very good. The actors are very good. So we may be taking a look at those in the future, as almost all the episodes that I've heard are family friendly. So we will be examining those, or actually probably it'd be better to say we'll be taking a listen at those later. Oh my, this is grueling work, but we love hearing from our fans.
Oh yes.
Yes. So I have another letter here from Dave in Colorado Springs. So he tells us that he just wanted to say that I thought you guys did a great job on your first podcast. Loved the discussion of the LLT shows, Lamplighter Theater, and the interview with Mark Hamby. You managed to get some thoughts from him, which I haven't heard before. Looking forward to your next installment.
Dave, I just had to throw this in there, but the great, great questions from the listener's point of view comes from our amazing, amazing talented man over here. Sitting in our mailroom next to me.
That's right.
JD.
JD. Not me. Woo-hoo. JD. That's yes. Right. He is excellent interviewer.
Yes.
Well, thank you. Well, thank
we
you
have
very
a,
much.
We have it all. See, we have a good interviewer over there and a good interviewee to my right. So, wow. That's amazing. I'm glad. You know, I'm just glad I can just be in the presence of these two wonderful gentlemen here.
As you should.
Yes, that's good. Thank you.
We stoop down every once in a while, huh, Roy?
Right. Yeah. Every month when we do this, you guys just... stoop and stoop to snoop.
He didn't ask you. He asked me.
Oh, go ahead.
Please. I agree with what you said. So, oh,
wonderful.
Check this out. I got a letter from Roger, and he says, thank you for sharing about Lamplighter Theater. The summaries of the books were incredible. I have read over 80 of the titles, and you guys did a great job. I want to read them again, he says. He goes on to say, likewise, the interview with Mark was phenomenal. Great interview questions from the listener's point of view. I learned some very new things that I am glad to know.
Wow, this guy sounds like an avid reader.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Definitely. 80 titles.
80 titles.
And that's although, just... I would like to say, Roger, you may have gotten a little bit more had you actually read like the actual books instead of just the titles.
That was good. That was good.
Again, here we are again. We just sit at the feet of the master here. JD coming up with these beautiful questions.
Yes.
Well, I just don't know what to say.
How about you read a letter?
There you go. Good idea.
Okay. 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 I've got one here from Jackie. She says, first of all, I wanted to say that I've really enjoyed your podcast and haven't missed an episode yet. After episode number 2, I went out and bought the Screwtape letters that day. With the insight that I received, I felt that I got more out of the CDs than I might had I not heard your podcast. Thank you. I can't wait for future episodes. I love the insight, hearing interviews, knowing when things are coming out, and most of all, how you bring the gospel truth to everything. In your last episode, you mentioned you were going to take a few listeners' questions. Knowing that you guys are big AIO fans, I've asked this before to other fans, but I need to ask you too. Which character from AIO do you feel you personally represent or seem to be most like? Explain why, too. Thanks, guys. Keep up the incredible hard work. I appreciate it. God bless, Jackie.
Whoa, woo. Thank you, Jackie.
That was awesome.
Very yes. Verbose.
Yes.
Very, very loquacious, too.
Let's very see. Awesome. The Adventures and Odyssey character I am most alike. I would probably have to go with...
I know.
You do?
But go ahead. I just want to see if we agree, as usual.
I'm going to have to go with Matthew Parker.
Ooh, right again.
The reason why being, not in age, but in the way he takes apart things, et cetera, et cetera. You can ask my family if you ever meet them.
That's true.
And hopefully you don't, because we don't want you to know where we live.
True.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of scary.
But I've taken apart several cell phones, several stereos, fixed them.
Fixed them?
Oh, they worked when you put them back together?
The stereo, not the phone.
Not the phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, some other things I wish not to mention, but I'd probably have to say that's the character I'm most alike.
That's good.
Kind of right now.
Kind of right now.
I don't know, JD. Who are you most alike?
Well, I think I'm probably most like Eugene Meltzner, not to be arrogant or anything, but I'm most like him because I really enjoy working with computers. I like tinkering around with electronic gadgets, and so I really like technology. I don't have his genius, of course, but I also am a little bit of a stickler on grammar, so I think I'm like him in those aspects, but definitely don't have his brain power. How about you, Andrew?
Well, I would have to say a combination of two different characters, more for my interests than any type of academic merit or anything of that nature. Like, Trent Dwight is all into science and everything, and that's me all over. I love science, physics, all that stuff. And then Eugene, of course, is a great math whiz, and I love math too. That's like my thing, math and science. So I guess if you blended Trent Dwight and Eugene Meltzner together and subtracted about half of their brain power, then you might have something close to me.
And subtract the fact that Trent plays cello.
That's true, because I play the drums, not the cello.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't even know what a cello is.
Andrew, that's kind of morbid, putting Eugene and Trent in a blender.
What kind of person are you?
Wow, okay, thanks.
Are you
actually
juicy?
You know what? Actually, okay, I'll just come out with it. I'm most like Regis Blackard. All right, just... You guys made me say it now, okay? I just can't do his laugh. That's the only difference, okay? Okay, now that I've been exposed to the world, oh man, this is horrible. Why am I the one that's getting the brunt of all these? This is horrible. Wow. Oh man, what do I do?
Hand me that letter.
How do
right
I
there.
Save my reputation?
Hand me that letter right there.
Why? You just make fun of me. You just say I handed it to you the wrong way. Come on. Oh, I'm just kidding. We all love each other here at ATC, don't we?
Sometimes.
Depends.
Roy, take this blasted letter.
All right, what's this say here? It doesn't say any name. It says, oh, it's addressed to me.
Now who made the mistake?
Oh, wait. Yes. Hey, it's my line. Well, that does it for this episode. You can send us your questions, comments, or grievances to ATC@audiotheatercentral.com.
Grievances? What are we talking about? Did somebody die or something?
No one died.
Oh, yeah, duh. And our website is www.audiotheatercentral.com.
Also, if you're subscribed to the podcast via iTunes, we'd appreciate it if you'd leave us a review and or a rating. Only 5-star ratings, please.
Yeah,
no kidding.
Come on.
Just leave your honest opinion. Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you next time. Have a Merry Christmas everybody.
Woohoo!
Audio Theater Central is a production of Radio CSS and is recorded at the Radio CSS Studios in Phoenix, Arizona. Today's script was written by Jack Carlson. The episode was produced by Roy Lee at Axe 2 for You Studios. Executive producer was Jack Carlson.
Hey, what happened?
Hey,
door just closed.
Oh no, we're stuck in here.
Hey, let us out of here. Hey, this isn't funny.
Hey, open the door.
JD, who do you think it was?
Oh, blasted mailman.
Oh my word. I thought you were just like, wow, he really is crazy. How are we gonna get out of here?